WFAN, WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1 New York, and Odyssey Sports Station.
All right, Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So, some controversy out there with the Staten Island Little League team and their manager, longtime manager Bob Laterza, who was unhappy with Aaron Judge, who didn't turn around and acknowledge the team in the way that he wanted him to acknowledge the team when he was on deck and the kids were yelling his name.
Hey Al, do you remember this whole thing about acknowledgement? Didn't Carton do say something about acknowledge me? There was a whole argument about being acknowledged.
I do not recall
you
this.
I kind of feel like we went down this road with somebody else before.
Okay.
That felt like they were not acknowledged.
All right.
Like in a case like this.
Okay.
Now, this sounds idiotic to me. All right, completely idiotic.
Let me read you the quote for people who have not heard this. How about turning around or wave to New York and the kids that think you're a hero? Laterza told SI, what is it, Staten Island Live, SILive.com?
Yeah.
Told the site, SILive.com, before his Staten Island club was eliminated from the Little League World Series. They are the ones who pay your salary.
So well, I mean, I guess Gerrit Cole and DJ LeMayu and Aaron Boone aren't enough. We have to have more. It's like we don't get the ice cream that we want. We want more ice cream.
The coach also complained that only DJ LeMayu, Tim Hill, and a few others attended a prearranged session with the Yankees. And Gerrit Cole, Nestor Cortez, Jason Dominguez, and Aaron Boone spent time with the team later in the afternoon.
I mean, come on. What are we doing?
I mean, this is just so...
It sounds so pathetic.
I was surprised to see that the guy was as old as he was, because generally you hear things like this from younger people, where this guy would be like, hey, you get what you get, fine. You know, like that. Usually guys who look like Bob Laterza that are from Staten Island are like, so what? Let's go out there and play the game. If he doesn't look at you, he doesn't look at you. Come on, you got to be a man at some point. You're 12-year-old. Let's go. But had to crush the Yankees.
Well, I mean, crush Aaron Judge more to be more specific, and to mention him by name. And watching that game on ESPN, I thought ESPN did a great job presenting the game, showing how the players were interacting with all the Little League players. And by the way, Bob, if you're Aaron Judge and you get off that plane, you get swarmed like locusts.
Yeah.
You think it's easy to deal with everybody and to meet everybody and to see everybody? And it was interesting listening to Jazz Chisholm talking about how the one kid waited all the way until he got to the end of the line, and he was, you know, Jazz was his favorite player, and Jazz was telling the story on ESPN. And I'm just thinking, man, those players got off that plane, were hounded, got off the bus at the stadium, were hounded again, made their way through the field, were hounded again, like they should have been, because they are the idols to all these young men that are playing Little League Baseball. But for this manager to say this about Aaron Judge, I mean, to me, that is like the ultimate insult.
Yeah, it's pathetic. And the Yankees, good for the Yankees, so they put out a statement that said, we wish Staten Island success in winning the championship. And then he goes, win or lose, we intend to invite them to Yankee Stadium. However, it would have been much better if Staten Island's coach called us to understand the facts before bitterly reacting in such a public fashion. Reaching out to us would have been the prudent way to act. It would have set a fine example for his young players. Aaron Judge always acts with kindness and respect. The coach would learn a lot from him.
100%. Good for them. Good for them is right.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, it's just pathetic. It's silly.
It sounds ridiculous. You know, it just sounds ridiculous.
And apparently this guy, this Bob Laterza, he's an older guy, gray hair, older guy. He didn't even know who David Cohn was. How do you not know who David Cohn is? If you're a longtime Little League coach on Staten Island and you don't know who David Cohn is?
And I would assume since he's a longtime Little League coach, he's probably spent hours upon hours upon hours supporting the Little League, and you know, and that part of his life has probably been, you know, very impactful for a lot of young men that have come through that Little League. I'm assuming. So I don't want to torch him too bad because he's probably. This is
like he did this to himself, man.
This is his 15 minutes of fame, and he did acknowledge that a number of the Yankees did show up, including Gerrit Cole, who did speak to the team. I guess Gerrit Cole's not big enough.
Yeah, for
I mean, I guess it has to be Aaron Judge, and you got to show up, and you got to be. I mean, like to question Aaron Judge in any way, shape, or form at this juncture with the way that he's carried himself sounds and looks idiotic, and it's embarrassing.
Yeah. It is embarrassing. And now, instead of this being the great story that it should have been for the kids, and they did get eliminated yesterday, but the great story for the kids, now this is the thing that takes center stage because their manager or their coach, whatever you want to call them, had a big mouth and had to say stupid stuff. It's terrible. But, I mean, of all people, Aaron Judge
is the person you're going to go after. There's nobody more perfect. Him and Jalen Brunson are perfect.
I think Aaron Boone basically said it perfectly when he was talking about Aaron Judge. Everybody knows who Aaron Judge is because Aaron Judge is so big. And you can't miss him.
Yeah.
And when he comes walking in there, I mean, it is like Adonis is walking into the stadium.
Yeah.
And everybody knows who he is. Everybody. I can't even imagine what he... Like, when he gets away from the stadium and wants to go out to dinner or wants to go out to dinner with his teammates, could you imagine... The aggravation that he has to go through in his private life?
Yeah, I don't know because I have, but you would know more than me.
I know exactly what he probably, you know, there's probably, you know, he is a human being, by the way. And I know he makes $360 million and he hits bombs for home runs. And he's you know, one of the best players of his generation, without question. And he's also a gentleman and he's a great advocate and face for the Yankees and Major League Baseball. And everybody, I think everybody really respects him as a player and as a person.
Yeah.
And that's why this is so harsh. But I just think off the field, quiet time, vacation time with his wife, family, whatever, it's just, he probably is just inundated constantly with requests.
Oh, of course. I mean, being the best player on the New York Yankees, being a gigantic man, being the face of baseball, yeah.
I mean, that comes with the territory, though, you know? I can't even imagine. And, you know, for this coach, who obviously this is his 15 minutes of fame, and I'm sure he's had some success as a coach, whatever, but to call out a guy of this stature and character is a totally wrong thing. Hopefully he apologizes to the Yankees and to Aaron Judge. I really hope he does.
Doesn't seem like a guy who would.
He
but
should.
Maybe all this after he should, sees
he
this
no
reaction.
Idea what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, I think it's heard BT and Sal trying to get him on yesterday, but I don't think that they did because I didn't see any stuff on our Twitter page or Instagram page yesterday about them getting him on. But I mean, he's got an opportunity now that people have seen his name out there to retract some of this and apologize for what he said and give some sort of explanation for it and. I mean,
yeah, David Cohn walked over to it and says, he says, "Hey, Coach Bob, how you doing?" I didn't know who he was. He knew who I was, laughed Laterza. He's a nice man. Out of place, out of mind. I was like, "Who are you?" The David Cohn.
Wow. This is not a good day for Bob Laterza, is it? It's supposed to be like the best time for Bob Laterza. And then Bob Laterza just stepped in it.
There goes Bob Laterza Day over in Staten Island. He was good at, he might have been the Italian American of the Year in Staten Island. I don't know. Maybe
they were drawing up the proclamation and then had to rip it up.
A lot of competition for that award in Staten Island.
Oh, yeah. For sure. You actually could be one of them, right?
Well, I don't live there anymore, but I was born and raised.
Yeah. You know this Little League? Are you familiar with it?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Successful Little League, obviously.
Oh yeah, it was that and Mid Island were the standard bearers for Little League.
How many Little Leagues are on Staten Island?
I would say at least three now. I was in something called the Titan League, which was with the Catholic school system. You know, so because I went to parochial school.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically,
did you ever get hit with a ruler?
On your knuckles?
I got picked up and kind of pushed against the wall by one of the Christian brothers. Very Christian of him to do that to a child. And I don't remember getting hit by with a ruler.
All right. Did you get hit by something?
Oh, well, just said, those kind of things, yeah.
Did anybody take their belt off and whack you in the ass?
No, but I saw that done to others.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Former corporal punishment.
Yes, in the name of Christ.
Well, to keep you in line, were you a bad kid or a good kid?
I was probably good and then trended toward being a wise ass as I got older.
Yeah.
Did you go all the way through senior year of high school through that system?
Yeah, grades 1 through 12, yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And if there was Catholic kindergarten when I was of that age, I would have gone to that too, but there wasn't.
Wow. Something you didn't know about Eddie Scazzeri.
I knew he had gone. I didn't think he went all the way through high school. Yes. I know he had some Catholic school. I thought that he had gone into public school in high school. I just assumed
that. Oh, no, I would have been chewed up in high school and public high school in Staten Island. Forget about it.
What do you mean you would have been chewed up?
Oh.
Just because you were a little quirky and nerdy, yeah, Star Warsy?
Yeah, it would not have gone well for me.
So you think you would have been bullied big time in a public Staten Island high school?
Oh, my God,
because you liked aliens and Star Wars and stuff?
Yeah.
And the Mets?
You know, and for 18 years, he's been taking that out on me.
That is true. There is a little bit of that.
No, there's a lot of that.
Even though he didn't even go through it. You really didn't even go through that bullying, and you still take it out on Boomer.
Probably, yeah.
There's some misplaced anger that goes on in there.
Jesus.
You know?
Now it really is coming full circle. Now I'm starting to understand it more and more, yes.
Yeah. So Bob Latour. There's certain guys that you gotta know when they come up to you if you are a baseball coach. And David Cone, New York, has to be one of those guys. He played for both the Yankees and the Mets. He is a current member of the broadcast team on the Yes Network.
Doesn't say much.
And he says stuff on Sunday Night Baseball. He doesn't say anything.
Right.
And he's also on Sunday Night Baseball. Like, you could make a case he could be the most recognizable former player in New York right now, other than Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, if you're paying attention. I mean, if
you don't even need to pay attention.
But what I'm saying is that they don't really show those guys that often. They show them at the top of the broadcast. And they may go to their booth maybe once or twice if they have something going on. And then maybe they don't even say goodbye. I mean, just
come on.
They get off the air.
You see David Cone plenty. They open the broadcast. They go in the booth. Come on. You can't make an excuse for that. David Cone's everywhere.
Yeah. I did like the way that Paul O'Neill was dressed last night. He looked good last night.
Not as good as Brandon Tierney, though.
Everybody, he looked better than Brandon Tierney.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
Everybody was compared dress-wise to BT last night, and BT won.
You're telling me like BT was a male model last night Yankee Stadium's field?
I think so.
Right.
See, I mean,
Paul O'Neill looks great.
He looks great.
He can still play.
I know. Yeah, he's in great shape. He looks great, but he's got, you know, standard shirt and tie and pants, like just standard.
Yeah, but he had a nice jacket on last night, you know, doing the stand-up before the game.
Yeah.
Looked good. He looked sharp.
Yeah, but in comparison, standing next to on the same field, Brandon Tierney.
I got to take Paul O'Neill. I'm sorry.
Do I need to show you that picture again?
I saw that picture.
And BT's better looking.
Much.
Look at Paul O'Neill. Look how he keeps himself in great shape.
Yeah, he's
too.
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah. BT's better. He's fine. BT's better.
BT's a much better looking guy than Paul O'Neill.
Well, Paul O'Neill will say this is the whole thing about bald, not bald. Right? I mean, BT's a bald-headed man in his 50s, like Al. And Paul O'Neill's got a full head of hair.
He does, yeah. But just facially.
And I thought he looked sharp.
Why don't we settle this with a testosterone blood test?
We already know the answer to that, to BT in a landslide. Stephen Waldron, or whoever's there, because I know Stephen's coming in today. See if you can find... it's on the WFAN... X account. It's BT standing on the field looking at his phone. And I could probably find it to you and text it to you quickly, too. But it's worth the CBS Sports Network audience seeing it. I think we need to get
especially
that picture.
Especially the female audience.
Yeah, for sure. It's almost like a thirst trap. I think it's like a thirst trap spot. I'm telling you, man. I mean, and he's like, he's walking around, he's dapping up the Guardians, he's talking to kids.
Man.
We sent the single best WFAN representative to that stadium last night.
The BT-isms were isming.
They were isming. Earn the right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fundamentally disagree.
You think he dapped up Aaron Boone?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Or just dapping up pro players as he's walking around.
You know, BT always says he can't say disagree. It's always fundamentally disagree. We fundamentally disagree.
Why can't he just say disagree?
I don't know. You got to ask him that.
Why do you have to use the word
we fundamentally disagree
what is that,
on this?
Fundamentally? What do you mean fundamentally?
I don't know.
That's a word you don't have to use.
Superfluous is what fundamentally disagreeing is.
All right. So just say that then.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Disagree. This is something we fundamentally disagree on. Yeah. But I'm telling you. Last night, I fundamentally agreed that he was the best-looking guy in that stadium.
I don't know. Paul O'Neill looked sharp in their opening last night.
He looked sharp. There it is.
Oh, there it is. Look at that.
I'm telling you, man, with that vest and the pants, freshly shaved head, tan.
Yeah. On the phone.
I'm telling you.
That looks like a guy who's getting busy.
Yeah,
he's a busy guy. He's talking to Cash or something about like some players or something.
Talking to Cash?
Yeah.
Texting Cash?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just walking by women, getting them pregnant. Just, just walking there all of a sudden. Like, whoa! Jizz? Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the morning show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. We've got Jerry Recco back. He's got another update for us on losses last night. What's up, Jerry?
We're brought to you by The Farmer's Dog. Fresh human grade dog food delivered right to your door by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. All right, let's get to the nuts and bolts first of the Yankee loss last night in extra innings.
2-2. Weakly hit over toward first. LeMahieu gloves. He won't have a play. Another run comes in to score. The infield was drawn in. Nobody's able to get to first. It's an RBI base hit infield single for Noel, and it's now 9-3 Cleveland.
So what is going on here?
I want to say something. I'm sorry. You snapped my fingers at me. Your fingers at me. Yeah, 9-3 was the score. Then 9-5 was the final. I thought you wanted to say something. Guardians beat the Yankees in 12. Longest game of the baseball season this year, over 4 hours. Cleveland scored 6 runs in that 12th. Juan Soto and Aaron Judge homered early. Judge did add a double late in this game. Soto was asked afterwards, aside from you and Aaron, why doesn't the team hit?
I'll say it's just part of the game. They have a really good pitching staff coming out of the bullpen. They did a pretty good job to settle down and making good pitches.
And then the follow-up, all right, so the bullpen's good. Well, how tough are they?
It's not easy at all because, they are good, but it is what it is. Sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to fail.
That's true, and they did fail last night. They're now 73-53 as they fall a half game behind Baltimore for first place. You've got Nestor Cortes making the start tonight. Coverage on the Fan at 6:25. Also from last night, John Sterling was back in the booth.
Pitch swung on and hit in the air to deep right center field. Back goes Soto and Judge, and she's gone. Into the right center field Yankee bullpen.
And so a home run there for Cleveland, and it brings up the idea of what if. What would have been, we've got a couple of new Yankees here. Remember Brandon trying to figure out the Alex Verdugo home run call?
Yeah.
They've got a new player in Jazz Chisholm, of course. So Michael Cañas did ask him what a lot of the fans have asked.
What would John's home run call have been for Jazz Chisholm?
Hold on. Anybody have any idea where he's going here?
And all that jazz.
Okay.
Yeah, like soothe jazz. Smooth jazz.
Well, that's what Ricky does.
Jazz. Yes, I know.
What about Verdugo?
He didn't have one for Verdugo?
No, he never called a Verdugo home run.
Huh. Verdugo.
Verdugo is gone.
This is what I say to you.
There you go.
Okay, well, here is your answer.
What would John's home run call have been for Jazz Chisholm? He's not playing today, so it's not like you're giving it away.
No, that's right. Well, it certainly would have involved Chicago and all that jazz.
Right.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. And I have one for Verdugo that I can't do because I hit on his name, Madugi.
Right.
I'm going to say Doogie Delivers.
Nice.
Doogie Delivers.
I guess that's his nickname.
I know. I don't like it, though.
Yeah. Just a classic alliteration spot.
Yeah.
That was it.
I was a little disappointed in that one, but that's
Jazz Jism.
You could just call him that, I suppose. A Jism for Chism. I could do that too. You never know. All right. As for the Mets, let's get to their disaster. Now I'm going to play a long because we heard Howie with that disaster of a play in the ninth inning last hour. This is how it sounded on Mason TV with the Oriole announcers. 35 seconds.
Shot the other way in the left. Nimmo got a great jump, and it's off his glove. It kicks behind him. It's sitting behind the tarp. Mullins will come in to score. And then Young throws down to third, throws it away. It's off the tarp, backed up by Nimmo. Here comes Mountcastle. He scores. Throw to third, not in time. It's an absolute mess.
And they're going to go home.
Two-run score on a little league play full of wild throws and boneheaded mistakes, and the Orioles get two back. M-E-T-S mess. It's 9-5.
Go kick their ass today. Jeez. Now.
That was a little
But that's so true, though.
I know.
I mean, God.
Doesn't mean you have to like it.
I know. Well, if we say it, it's one thing. I'd be running that
Met clubhouse all morning on loop.
I mean, that was a disaster.
Yeah, but can you play baseball fired up like that? You know what I'm saying?
But it's still...
You need to... It's,
you could be a little more into it, I suppose. I don't know that it actually works when you get up in the batter's box, but I don't know. That would annoy me, though, if I was a player. But
it's the announcer, though. It's not the other team. Do they get annoyed by... I guess they do get annoyed by the announcers because you saw them...
Haven't we had players call up to the booth during games when they've heard things
they
don't like?
You're right.
That's usually the home team announcer.
Right, but it doesn't mean that it can't have an effect on you if you hear something you don't like. So, here was Brandon Nimmo. This is interesting. We know he's banged up. He's telling us why he didn't go head first for that ball, and that's worried about further injuring himself.
Swinging felt good. Throwing felt good before, but I was like, I want to avoid diving, you know. And, you know, of course, baseball finds you. I make that play, I feel like, 99 out of 100 times, but I was trying to get down as soft as I could.
Throwing it away.
It's amazing that pitchers sometimes just cannot throw the ball.
I bet when
they
can't throw it to first.
They can't throw it to first. They can't throw it to second. They can't throw it to third.
Yeah.
Certainly, they can't throw from behind home plate to third base.
Yeah, that ball just sailed on him. Great.
A little bit longer than 60 feet 6 inches, G.
That's right. Who's that? John Lester could never throw to first base. Remember that?
Yes, and he would run it over and then either flip it or run all the way over.
He could not throw the ball. Got a ground ball to him. Could not throw it to first base.
We were talking about what's more mental, baseball. That's in his head, 100%. Because he probably has a catch every day like that. But then in the game, you're thinking about it too much.
Well, you're anxious and you got to speed it up and you got to play at full speed. That's the difference. Then just playing as opposed to just playing catch.
Who was the Yankee second baseman? Was it
Knobloch?
It was Knobloch.
Steve Sachs.
Which was the one that couldn't throw to first?
Both of them.
Oh, Sachs too?
Yes.
Yeah, Steve Sachs.
Knobloch, I feel like I remember. I don't remember Sachs not being able to.
And then also Mackie Sasser. With the Mets.
He couldn't
tap,
throw
tap
back.
And lob it.
Yes.
And then runners started stealing on him when he would lollipop it back to the pitcher. That is true. Here was Carlos Mendoza. You lost again. Are you? Not that they've been losing every game, but they've played very 500 baseball now for the last few weeks. Are you checking in on the Braves?
I'm not watching because we gotta win our games here. You know, like if not winning, we're not winning games. It doesn't matter. You know, so I was not looking at the scoreboard. Today.
Well, I'm sure someone told them the Braves won 3-1. They beat the Phillies. Marcelo Zuna, the big home run. He was asked afterwards, with all these injuries on your team, do you feel like you need to be doing more?
I don't take it personal. I just trying to like help my team and help my teammate and trying to go out there and trying to have fun and then bringing the energy to them to have fun too and do their best.
I haven't seen this highlight. I like how he stands on the plate and just admires.
Yeah, That's funny. Guy is a behemoth when he
hits. He's a baller, man. He's pretty good. He's batting. I checked his numbers. He's batting .309, 37 homers, 94 RBIs, and 80 runs scored. That's pretty good. One more thing on the Mets, not to be forgotten. Jose Quintana was terrible. 7 runs over 5 innings, so that's not good. More from Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers. We talked last hour about how difficult camp has been. He says it's been difficult, but you know what? The vets love it.
I think some of the older guys enjoy the, to steal a coaching word, the callous part of training camp where you're kind of grinding. And some people believe that although it puts more, you know, strain on you in training camp, that actually gets you more ready to play when the season starts.
All right, well, the season starts
pretty
soon.
That's what I've been talking about, really, with Brian Daboll, more so than Rob Saleh, but Rob Saleh knows his job's on the line. I think Brian Daboll's doing that because he wants to get the most out of Daniel Jones, and he wants to coach Daniel to the point where, you know, when he's on the field, he wants him angry, and he wants him playing with purpose, and he wants to play, you know, with a chip on his shoulder. And I think Saleh's doing it probably because, you know, he has a losing record, and he knows that this is it. This has got to be it. This is where you got to win. You got to get this team to the playoffs.
I mean, he's got very little control over that at this point, man.
Yeah, but he really does. But Aaron is saying that he's running the hard camp. I understand that. That's set forth by the coach.
No, I understand. But like the players, they've got a great roster. Rob Saleh, God love him, but he's proven out to be not a top end head coach to this point, and he's got a quarterback who's got to stay healthy and lead this team to the playoffs. I mean, he's basically got to be a jockey on Secretariat this year. That's what he needs to be.
As long as Secretariat, you know, doesn't twist an ankle or anything.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. At Giants camp, you guys were there with Daniel Jones yesterday, of course. Evan and Tiki sat down with Dexter Lawrence, and he says they really want to go out and dominate as a defense.
That's how we walk around every day, and I think it starts with that, just like your confidence and your understanding and just knowing who you are and what your team needs from you. And we all quarter into each other every day.
And the newest of Giants is Brian Burns. How are you adjusting to your new club and surroundings?
Everything feels different. Just in general, like I said, it's been a fast process for me. You know, this is my first, obviously my first move. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of things are new, but I feel good about the season. I feel good with the direction that we're headed in.
Imagine these guys. You're a big guy. Very big guy.
Imagine me?
But okay. I was talking to G. Oh. So, like, when you guys stand up, it's two big dudes.
Right.
Imagine they show up, they see Tiki and Evan. Evan's just, like, thinner and not quite.
Yeah. It looks like he won a contest.
And
to
next
there.
To Tiki.
Yeah, right. I know. I know what you mean.
Tiki's, like, so jacked still.
I sit next to a 6'4 former professional athlete.
But you're 6'1 yourself. I mean, when you stand up, it doesn't look crazy.
With Evan, yeah, I know what you're saying. And plus, it's generally like a really old, ratty, hooded sweatshirt.
He doesn't dress great. That is true.
I think Joe characterized it perfectly. Looks like somebody that won a station contest to be there.
Yeah, to hang out. Ask a question.
I just meant comparatively speaking to Tiki. I didn't mean that he looks like a contest winner.
Well,
I wasn't going there. I just meant Tiki looks ridiculous.
He does, man. He's in great shape. I got to say, I am jealous of the shape that Tiki is in.
And keeps himself there. Vikings defensive coordinator Brian Flores did reply to Tua, who called him a, quote, terrible person. Flores' first reaction.
Part of coaching is correcting. I'm always going to correct. I'm always going to have a high standard. Look, I've done a lot of reflecting and, you know, on this situation. And, you know, I think there's things that I could do better, for sure. And I've grown in that way.
He says, I can't be that bad of a guy. I do have friends.
Over the long haul, I've had a lot of great relationships over my 21-year career here in the league. But I'm also always looking to get better and involved. I'm open to getting better.
I also think that, too, is the new generation of athlete, you know, where, you know, they don't take hard coaching very well. You know, especially if you're as talented as Tua is. You know, we were talking to Brian Daboll off the air yesterday, and he was just talking about Tua and how great he was when he worked with him at Alabama. And the thing that Brian said yesterday to us off the air, and all kind things about Tua, was like he was amazingly accurate, and he saw things on the field that I couldn't see on tape. And I would ask him, what was it like? Why, how did you see that? And he was just saying that Tua has this insane ability to see and anticipate things. And you know, look, he was coming off of that hip injury when he was drafted. The Chargers, they passed on Justin Herbert, and Herbert started out great with the Chargers. And everybody was saying, oh, the Miami Dolphins got it wrong. Maybe they got the coach wrong. Mm. And the coach wanted Herbert. The coach didn't want him. And I'm sure that Tua knew that or knows that. And that probably plays into some of the comments that Tua brought forth. But when you match him with Mike McDaniel and the accuracy aspect of the game, I mean, that's a match made in heaven, and it certainly has worked out for Tua. That, it's just surprising that Tua would go to the lengths that he did on the Le Batard show to absolutely hammer Flores like that. You never see that.
No, you don't. I've never seen it. And I think Brian Flores is going to have a tough time getting another head coaching job in the near future, because not only does he have a lawsuit still pending against the entire NFL, he also has one of the top-paid quarterbacks in the league calling him a terrible person.
Yep. And that's why he came out yesterday. And when he did, I think two of the players were standing next to him supporting him. Two of the defensive players, I think, while he was talking.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot going on. You know, and this the whole Bill Belichick way of coaching, I think that's by the wayside, at least in the NFL it is.
Lastly, WNBA, the Liberty beat the Wings by 20, and the Sun beat the Spark 69-61, a game they moved to TD Garden for a sellout crowd of 19,000 plus.
Yeah, we were breaking this down in the open, Jerry. I don't know if you missed it. Yeah, we were all over it.
I was probably editing Chad and Shannon. Jesus Christ.
Yes,
which I'll get to next hour now.
All right, sounds good, Jerry. We will see you then. It's Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the Built Ford Tough studio.
It's the morning show with Boomer and Geo.
I'm caught in the shadows, the American South, somewhere between it. All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So if you remember, it was last week, and the father of the Mets kid caster called up after they had announced it on the broadcast that he was going to, yes, what was his name? Kingston. So that he was going to call, you know, some of the game on Monday. And Kingston and his dad called us up and they said, we have a question for you. What, you know, what should he wear when he's doing this? And we had settled, you know, back and forth, and we came up with something. And Sylvia in Eastchester wants to talk about this. Sylvia, good morning. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Great, Sylvia. What's happening today?
Well, I was wondering if you saw the game where the little boy was doing a half inning.
Mm-hmm.
He actually took your advice, Boomer. He wore a suit and tie. He looked great.
Yes. Yes.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. So, yeah, and I'm looking at a picture of him right now. I just showed Gio it.
Yep.
And he's got the nice red tie on. He's got the blue blazer on, the blue shirt. And
yes.
It's a little bit MAGA country for me, but that's all right. That's good. I like it. He looks good.
Too.
He looks sharp, though, right?
He did. He was real. I thought of you right away. I said, oh, my God, I hope Boomer's looking at kids.
Yeah. So I know, kids like this, when my kid was in school, they would have to wear a jacket to school.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of the uniform. And then on special days, Gunnar would wear a tie. And I always thought, man, he looked so sharp when he was like 9 or 10 years old with a tie. And that's exactly the vibe that Kingston's given off.
Yes, and he's a nice kid, too.
Oh, of course. Like. Yeah. He's more than a nice kid, man. He's
smart,
got a
kid.
Yeah, smart and talented and everything.
Right.
So they definitely picked the right one, Sylvia. I'm glad that you got a kick out of it. So, yeah, he looked great.
You know, and the amazing thing is that this young man will probably be doing Met games. And what do you think about? When do you think, I'm just trying to think.
You want me to now put a date on Gary Cohen's retirement?
Yeah. 15 that years, like? maybe 15 years from now.
Maybe Gary. He could be in the running for Sterling's game.
Yeah. Already got younger guys than Kingston doing the games now. So
yes.
He might have a shot just right around the corner.
Yeah, but Kingston looks good, man. He looks sharp.
Yeah, so they're, Gary turned 60 recently, Gary Cohen. I don't know if he's going to do 15 more years,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he's going to do it until he's 75, 100%.
Gary Cohen,
75. Yeah, he loves it. He loves it.
I know he loves it. But
you know when they had that camera in the booth?
And he does the pen thing.
Yes.
Hey, Brandon Nimmo! And he drops the pen like that. Yeah.
Right, and then he goes like this.
Yeah, he's got
the whole Narpian look to him and everything.
Right, that thing. Hey, right. It's a home run for Pete Alonso. And then he picks up the thing, and then it's just quiet, and he's just filling out the book.
Yeah, I mean, if this is Kingston, he's got Kingston written all over it.
Yeah, man. It was funny. On Sunday, we have this collapse. There's a reason why I bring this up. It has something to do with Kingston. So we have this collapse on the golf course. Me and my friend Mike Buck, who actually also was in the NFL for a little bit. Cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I remember Mike Buck.
You do remember Mike Buck.
Yes, yeah. I do remember Mike Buck.
We got a whole play together one day. But anyway, so Mike Buck and I are up three holes with five to play. Mm. And
kind of like the spike game?
It was just horrible. So just we end up losing four holes in a row. It's just a mess. I completely fell apart. And it was just bad. And the other guys played well. It was bad. So as I'm handing the money over to my friend Tony Sansevero, former FDNY guy, great guy, but in that moment I hated his guts because he played, it felt like a sandbag day for him. That's what it felt like. It was his home course. He got too many shots. But anyway. So as I'm handing...
You sound like Wally.
As I'm handing the money to Tony, young man who's working at the golf course in that moment when I'm in like the worst mood of all time, he's like, hey, Gio, I forget his name already, but I'm a broadcasting major and I want to do play-by-play. And I'm like, oh.
Now you know how Aaron Judge feels around little
No, universe. I love talking. Stop. I love talking to young, passionate people that want to get in this business. I love doing it. But I was in such a bad mood in that moment, I had to like take a second. I'm like, all right, stop. Stop. Forget about this. Forget about how you suck at golf. Forget about the money that you just lost. Take a deep breath and talk to this kid like an adult. This is a moment for him. You know, forget about you and everything else. So I just took a deep breath. I'm like, okay. I was like, all right, what do you like to do? What are you getting into? What can I do to help you? And he was a young man who was interested in play-by-play. And I feel like, you know, even though the business has changed and kids that have all different types of interests and the video games and YouTube, there's still a lot of young men that love the idea of play-by-play.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It still has that cachet, like calling a baseball game, calling a football game, being that voice is still one of those dream jobs in this business, even for Gen Z kids.
Well, again, for us around here in New York, we're relatively lucky that we have top-end broadcasters doing local games. And I think we are somewhat spoiled in that regard. I don't care which team it is. It could be, you know, any of the hockey teams, basketball teams. They're all great. They all do a fantastic job. And you can understand why a kid like Kingston is going to want to do that, because he's listening and watching games.
Yeah.
And these guys are all so good at it that, you know, they're the prime example that these kids are trying to live up to. Much like the Little League kids are trying to live up to Aaron Judge.
Yeah, of course.
And look at you in the power chair talking with kids and having an impact.
Well, he was a young man. He was definitely in college.
Okay.
And he's working at the golf course. And I appreciate that, too. You know, he's going through school. He's got summer job. You know, he's working, doing, helping with the bags, cleaning the clubs, the whole thing. So, yeah, but it was one of those things where I could have very easily been like, not today. But I was like, you can't do that. You can't take your bad moment where you choked away the match. You can't take it and now ruin this guy's experience. You know? And I was like, well, I said, you could tell your dad and all your friends that you watched me hand over this money to my friend because I suck. And I choked. God. Anyway, but we came back the next day.
You got to let it go, man.
But we came back the next day and we finished second. Jerry's golf tournament to his father and son.
Huh. You know, you should have taken the advice from Brian Daboll when he was talking to us about losing a bad game or two. Remember, they were discussing some games that they had been involved in, and they had lost. Like we discussed the Spike game ad nauseum here.
Yes.
Yeah. So you got to kind of let it go, you know, and then you got to move on, and you got to worry about the next round. In your case,
the next shot, the next round. Yeah, right.
And you got to take it one shot at a time.
One shot, one chip, one putt at a time.
Right. Exactly.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.
It's the morning show with Boomer and Geo.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So if you remember, it was last week, and the father of the Mets kidcaster called up after they had announced it on the broadcast that he was going to, yes, what was his name? Kingston. So that he was going to call, you know, some of the game on Monday. And Kingston and his dad called us up and they said, we have a question for you. What, you know, what should he wear when he's doing this? And we had settled, you know, back and forth, and we came up with something. And Sylvia in Eastchester wants to talk about this. Sylvia, good morning. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Great, Sylvia. What's happening today?
Well, I was wondering if you saw the game where the little boy was doing a half inning.
Mm-hmm.
He actually took your advice, Boomer. He wore a suit and tie. He looked great.
Yes. Yes.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. So, yeah, and I'm looking at a picture of him right now. I just showed Gio it.
Yep.
And he's got the nice red tie on. He's got the blue blazer on, the blue shirt.
And
it's, it's a little bit MAGA country for me, but that's all right. That's good. I like it. He looks good. He looks sharp, though, right?
He did. He was real. I thought of you right away. I said, oh, my God, I hope Boomer's looking at kids.
Yeah. So I know, kids like this, when my kid was in school, they would have to wear a jacket to school. That was part of the uniform. And then on special days, Gunnar would wear a tie. And I always thought, man, he looked so sharp when he was like 9 or 10 years old with a tie. And that's exactly the vibe that Kingston's given off.
Yes, and he's a nice kid, too.
Oh, of course. Like. Yeah. He's more than a nice kid, man. He's
smart
got a
great kid.
Yeah, smart and talented and everything. Right. So they definitely picked the right one, Sylvia. I'm glad that you got a kick out of it. So, yeah, he looked great.
You know, and the amazing thing is that this young man will probably be doing Met games. And what do you think about – when do you think I'm just trying to think.
You want me to now put a date on Gary Cohen's retirement?
Yeah. 15 years, like? maybe 15 years from now.
Maybe Gary. He could be in the running for Sterling's
game. Yeah. Well, they already got younger guys than Kingston doing the games now. So
yes.
He might have a shot just right around the corner.
Yeah, but Kingston looks good, man. He looks sharp.
Yeah, so they're Gary turned 60 recently, Gary Cohen. I don't know if he's going to do 15 more years, man.
Yeah, he's going to do it until he's 75, 100%.
Gary Cohen...
Yeah, 75. He loves it. He loves it.
I know he loves it. But
you know when they had that camera in the booth?
And he does the pen thing.
Yes.
Hey, Brandon Nimmo! And he drops the pen like that.
Yeah. Right, and then he goes like this.
He's got
the whole Narpian look to him and everything.
Right, that thing. And, right, it's a home run for Pete Alonso! And then he picks up the thing, and then it's just quiet, and he's just filling out the book.
Yeah, I mean, this is Kingston. He's got Kingston written all over it.
Yeah, man. It was funny. On Sunday, we have this collapse. There's a reason why I bring this up. It has something to do with Kingston. So we have this collapse on the golf course. Me and my friend Mike Buck, who actually also was in the NFL for a little bit. Cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I remember Mike Buck.
You do remember Mike
Buck. Yes, yeah. I do remember Mike Buck.
We got to all play together one day. But anyway, so Mike Buck and I are up three holes with five to play. Mm. And
kind of the spike game?
It was just horrible. So just we end up losing four holes in a row. It's just a mess. I completely fell apart and it was just bad. And the other guys played well. It was bad. So as I'm handing the money over to my friend Tony Sansevero, former FDNY guy,
yep.
Great guy. But in that moment, I hated his guts. because he played. It felt like a sandbag day for him. That's what it felt like. It was his home course. He got too many shots. But anyway. So as I'm handing.
You sound like Wally.
As I'm handing the money to Tony, young man who's working at the golf course in that moment when I'm in like the worst mood of all time. He's like, hey, Gio, I forget his name already, but I'm a broadcasting major and I want to do play-by-play. And I'm like, oh.
Now you know how Aaron Judge feels around little
No. I love talking. No, stop. I love talking to young, passionate people that want to get in this business. I love doing it. But I was in such a bad mood in that moment, I had to like take a second. I'm like, all right, stop. Stop. Forget about this. Forget about how you suck at golf. Forget about how the money that you just lost. Take a deep breath and talk to this kid like an adult. This is a moment for him. You know, forget about you and everything else. So I just took a deep breath. I'm like, okay. I was like, all right. What do you like to do? What do you get into? What can I do to help you? And he was a young man and was interested in play-by-play. And I feel like, you know, even though the business has changed and kids that have all different types of interests and the video games and YouTube, there's still a lot of young men that love the idea of play-by-play.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. It still has that cachet, like calling a baseball game, calling a football game, being that voice is still one of those dream jobs in this business, even for Gen Z kids.
Well, again, for us around here in New York, we're relatively lucky that we have top-end broadcasters doing local games. And I think we are somewhat spoiled in that regard. I don't care which team it is. It could be, you know, any of the hockey teams, basketball teams. They're all great. They all do a fantastic job. And you can understand why a kid like Kingston is going to want to do that, because he's listening and watching games.
Yeah.
And these guys are all so good at it that, you know, they're the prime example that these kids are trying to live up to. Much like the Little League kids are trying to live up to Aaron Judge.
Yeah, of course.
And look at you in the power chair talking with kids and having an impact.
Well, he was a young man. He was definitely in college.
Okay.
And he's working at the golf course. And I appreciate that, too. You know, he's going through school. He's got summer job. You know, he's working, doing, helping with the bags, cleaning the clubs, the whole thing. So, yeah, but it was one of those things where I could have very easily been like, not today. But I was like, you can't do that. You can't take your bad moment where you choked away the match. You can't take it and now ruin this guy's experience. You know? And I was like, well, I said, you could tell your dad and all your friends that you watched me hand over this money to my friend because I suck. And I choked. God. Anyway, but
just
we came
let
back
it go.
The next
day. You got to let it go, man.
But we came back the next day and we finished second. Jerry's golf tournament to his father and son.
Huh. You know, you should have taken the advice from Brian Daboll when he was talking to us about losing a bad game or two. Remember, they were discussing some games that they had been involved in, and they had lost. Like we discussed the Spike game ad nauseum here.
Yes.
Yeah. So you got to kind of let it go, you know, and then you got to move on, and you got to worry about the next round. In your case,
the next shot, the next round. Yeah, right.
And you got to take it one shot at a time.
One shot, one chip, one putt at a time.
Right, exactly.
Boomer and Gio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network.